Welcome back. So here's your experience of what it's like to talk to people. And oh, here, hold on a second. Let me just mute everybody so we don't have any weird background effects. So that's another thing. The host has the capability of muting and unmuting people. I think you can also make it so people can't unmute themselves. So you would be totally in control of that. But people can also raise their hands for the teacher, so to let the teacher know that they have a question. But I was wondering, before we go on to have a discussion, what did you learn from doing this with each other? You could just put your mouse to the upper right-hand corner of that little box and click on unmute. Or in the lower left-hand corner where the microphone is, you could click on that and get rid of the red slash, and then you can speak.
I learned that it actually feels quite natural.
And you're surprised.
I am, because I'm a bit of a technophobe, and I haven't had to do any of this. So this is a first experience other than I've done Skype, but not this.
Well, you know, It's pretty easy, isn't it, Maxine?
It is. I have no idea about the sending out the invitations and creating the link.
Well, here's the thing. The people at Zoom are great. They have videos. They have guides that show you, it's walk you through things. And their help is really helpful. And here's the other thing is, if you have a Zoom account, you don't have to provide tech support. So if somebody calls you up and says, well, I'm using your link and it doesn't work, you can say, well, please contact Zoom on their website. They have a little blue cartoon thing that you can click on and they'll chat with you there. I think they have a phone number as well. They're really helpful. So they provide the tech support for your students and for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I believe you can talk to a real person at Zoom, Barbara.
Zoom is great.
Thank you, Anna.
I think it's wonderful to see people close up that I really haven't noticed so much. You can see every little smile, crinkle in the eye, everything. You can see people's moods. I just never looked in the breakout rooms for anything like that, but I noticed that there were just three of us.
Well, and you know, I mean, I use the breakout group for when I'm teaching classes online and when I'm teaching advanced trainings, and you know, I have people do exercises. Like Moshe said, that an ATM, you know, is that in an ATM we create an environment for learning. A breakout group is just another environment for learning. How do you create a situation where the students, the participants, the trainees, whoever, can learn from and with each other? And I dare say that's what you just did, right? You found out about your commonalities with people that, you know, maybe at the other side of the world or next door. And you found out about your shared concern. You also found out that you learned from each other, that we have something to offer each other. And That's something to remember. I mean, I think one thing that gets in the way of people doing this is that they're afraid that they're going to mess up. And you are going to mess up, I promise. And the technology will fail. Yeah, but what you have to do is you have to practice. You have to get online with some people and try it out. I think I'm trying to talk and watch the chat, but Laura, at some point, here she says, Laura McMurdy from Washington State, also known as Ground Zero. I think that a valuable thing for us to do for each other is mini fake meetings where we troubleshoot audio quality, image, that way we get a sense with honest feedback and shift to students with a bit more confidence. Little meetings, 10 or 15 minutes. I think that's a great idea. I mean, yesterday I actually learned how to use Zoom better because of the conversation that we had. And there were things that I couldn't have done before, or that I really didn't know how I did before, that I learned. So, yeah, I would. I'm just looking at a question from Nicole. Salut, Nicole. I would have people sign up for a series of classes, and I would give them a different link. I would have a Zoom meeting for each class. It means that they have to sign up each time, and sometimes people go, well, I already signed up. And I tell them that this is, you paid for the class, but this is just, it's like you got an invitation to come, and it's a way of letting me know whether you're showing up or not. You know, it's like you have a party, RSVP, that way I know how many people to expect.
I think what we were tossing around in our group 12 was that, like, how does the sequence go? You know, you put it out there, right? You email people or you Facebook and say, hey, I'm going to be doing this thing. Are you interested? Email me. You receive the emails. Then I email them back and say, okay, go to Venmo and pay me. And then I get information and then I go to Zoom.
In the first email that you send out, you would say, I'm teaching this class. If you want to sign up, you could do a number of things. So you could have a form on your website. You know, so if you sell things on your website or people register for your classes on your website, it would be the same thing. Oops, sorry about that.
What if we aren't website ready at this point?
Right. If you don't do that, then you do PayPal or Venmo, or, you know, you can get a, you can have people send direct transfer to your bank, depending on which country that's in. That's either free or complicated and expensive. You can have people send you checks. Right. And then once they've sent you the money, then you would send them an email and say, welcome to the class. Here's the link to the, here's the link. Here's the schedule of the classes. For each class, you have to register individually. And then you'd send them a reminder each week, either with an SMS, a text message, or an email, saying, you know, class is coming up tomorrow. If you haven't signed up yet, here's the link. And you can set those all up ahead of time and just send them out when they're ready. Does that answer that question, Nicole?
Yes and no. I think that, so what I'm hearing you say, if I'm understanding correctly, is that, okay, send out my email. I'm offering this series of ATMs on these dates. To sign up, you need to pay on Venmo. Here's the link to Venmo. And then I'll confirm that.
Yeah, you could give them a link to your Venmo account or your PayPal account. I mean, you could set up a free PayPal. Well, PayPal has paypal.me. So like for the fundraiser, for me, I set up a personal PayPal account. People could just pay to that. And every time somebody pays to PayPal, you can even have an app on your phone. It will tell you who paid. Okay. It sends you a notification. You can have it send you an SMS or an email. Okay. And that would let you know when to send people that email.
The Zoom email. Great. Yes.
Yeah. And look, the thing is, the one thing about ATM classes is I like to talk to people before they come to an ATM class. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just do that via email because I want to have rapport with the person. So especially if it's somebody new, when somebody is joining an ATM class, I haven't taught ATM classes in a couple of years because when I got to 30 whatever years it was, I thought I've been teaching ATMs without taking a break. I'm taking a break. So I've had a few years off. But what I always did was call people and ask them, well, what positions are you comfortable in lying on the floor? Are there problems you'd like me to know about? You know, like somebody doesn't necessarily want to yell across the room that they have a colostomy bag. But I sure appreciate knowing that before somebody comes to class.
Yeah.
But that way I have a connection. So I would suggest, I would suggest not being afraid of the phone, especially in this time where connecting to people matters. And you could offer that to them. Say, I'd like to talk to you before class and find out about your interests and your concerns. Also, something that people talked about was, you know, buying ATMs and doing them. And I sell ATMs online. I think that's a really good thing. But I think here what we have to offer and what I'm talking about is about being a teacher. You know, being somebody who's a facilitator of somebody else's learning. And, you know, if we're going to be picky about language in English, I might say an educator rather than a teacher. Because a teacher is somebody that fills in what someone's missing. An educator is somebody who brings out from someone the abilities that they have. You know, so I think it's our ability as educators that's what makes it special. And in this time where Andrew made a joke right before the meeting where I, you know, asking if not being able to connect was an example of social distancing, but where we're keeping ourselves, you know, we're keeping distance. Like, I go for walks, I and for bike rides when the weather's nice, you know, because I want to be outside. I don't like being cooped up, and I like to move. I don't know about you, and I usually go out at times when I figure there aren't going to be a lot of people there because I don't really want to interact. But what I've noticed the last few days is people cross the street to avoid each other, and they smile. It's really weird. I'm like happy that someone's crossed the street. I'm not like, why? Are they scared of me? I mean, what's wrong with me? Why do they do that? But it's kind of cool. There's, you know, but we are keeping a distance. So I think having ways of being close is really important. You know, so I would think of giving people the recordings. I mean, you can sell your lessons, but even with the lessons I'm selling, thinking about how do I make a course, whether it's a self-paced course or an online course or a mixed live online and in-person course later. You know, how do I support people in learning? I don't want to just give them content, a book or a recording, right? I mean, how do I make the way that somebody is doing an ATM something that we can talk about? Right? Not so that I become the parent of a teenager and I'm telling them, slow down. It's for your own good. You know, but how do I make that something worthwhile and make that part of the class, not just the movement, but to take that earnestly? So, I would suggest using the recordings, using this medium as a way of having a more conversational, a more interactive relationship with your student, not correcting, right? But coaching. And you know, one thing about that, especially in this situation, one thing that makes the difference is that when I see somebody doing something, often, and especially if it's someone new, I would say, you know, excuse me, Tony, I noticed something. Can I tell you something? Or would you be interested in getting an idea about how you might do that better or differently? Or I noticed you're struggling. Would you like some help? That's getting permission. I think assuming permission, you know, it's kind of like you were knocking on the front door and next thing we know, you're sitting in the dining room in your underwear. It's kind of like, well, what happened? It's a big jump. And I use the metaphor advisedly. It's a level of intimacy that I think people appreciate you asking for. And the greatest thing that can happen is someone will say no. And you get to look at them and say, okay, thank you. Let me know if you need help. And that makes it safe for everybody else in the class to say no too. And you know, the cool thing is when that person says no and you respect it, they are so much more likely to ask for help later. Right? So I think it makes it possible for us to do that. And I think honestly, in keeping with our, our aim to support people in developing their own authority, I think that's a respectful way of doing that. That's a way of modeling it for the class. Right? It's also a way of keeping people from jumping on each other and giving each other advice that was unasked for, unwarranted.
Larry, I have to say, I'm surprised when we started how my heart kind of opened to see you. And it was, I didn't think this medium would be so real. Like, that's the thing that I could imagine. I've stayed away from all the online things because increasingly I teach to the group or to the person that's there. So I could never understand how you can just read an AY lesson and have it feel right to me. But this was very heartening.
Well, look, I love that you said that, Maxine. It's nice hearing your voice, by the way, and seeing you. And look, I think a hesitation that some of us have about this too is we think about this as a package, as a performance. Right? I mean, there's great theater available. We're in the second golden age of television, as they say. And, you know, you can rent a movie on your Amazon Prime channel and watch a movie without going to the theater. Right? So we think about this as something that is packaged and performed and isn't sincere. Right? It isn't, there's no vulnerability in that. It's a performance. But I think it's kind of hard to hide.
Yeah.
Here. Right. And I like that. I like what you said about it because I think it is very human. You know, which means it's also risky. And look, I'll say one more thing about that, and then let's have some questions. The thing is that when you're here, you know, you are going to mess up, and I think that's the best thing that could happen, because you know, when I mess up, when you mess up, then what happens? Then I get to demonstrate learning. And if you believe in the social theory of learning, which is that people learn from what the people around them are doing, like the idea of a role model, then I don't want to be demonstrating teaching. You know, if I want to inspire, support, facilitate my students in learning, then I want to demonstrate my capacity to learn. So when I mess up, when I flub up a line or I forget something, or somebody points out a mistake that I made anatomically or that whatever, I mean, I have that moment, that oh, shit moment. And then I think, oh, this is so cool. Because now I get to learn something. And look, the worst thing that can happen in class is you get to learn something. And what are you an expert in? Learning. So, I mean, I think that that's a place where, not just in this moment, but, you know, with our students, that we get to be human. And I think if you don't do that, then you're still in the, you know, the danger of our business. And whether you think of it as a business or not, the danger of the way we are with people is we talk about awareness. And you may not have thought about this, but what most people hear is, by the way, you're not aware. Sometimes they hear like, I'm more aware than you are. Right? Because you're talking about awareness, you're implying they're not aware. I mean, I think you have to be the Dalai Lama to get around that. We all have to be. Right, we have to understand that we can't play the I'm more aware than you are game. Because I think that puts people one down, and that's opposite from what we want to do. So I think it behooves us to be like, our methodology is a methodology of questions. I don't know the answers. I know what questions to ask. And since there's a gazillion questions, knowing which question to ask, knowing where to look for the answers, knowing how to find them and understand them, that's what we all do. That's what we need to demonstrate. Okay. Let's have some questions.
Hi, Larry, Patrick.
Hi, hello, Patrick.
Hi. So I actually have some very practical question about, I mean, I have to start a 10-day segment of the Berlin training program starting Wednesday. All Germany is shutting down, and I'm trying to like do that online now. Somehow I already set up my whole living room with a phone press tables, two cameras, a big monitor and everything. But it's just star. So I never did that before. So for example, I want to record the whole thing and give that to the trainees afterwards. That would be a 10-day session. Would you still use the cloud of Zoom to store that, or would you attach a hard drive and put it on there? That's one question. I mean, there's probably more popping up, but that's one coming up immediately.
So it would be expensive to do that on Zoom.
Okay. Because
they charge you by the gigabyte, and there's like, you get 1 gigabyte free, and then I don't know if it's like 40, and then it's 100. And I think they charge you, I think it's like $1 per gigabyte per month.
Okay. And how much gigabyte is an hour teaching?
I think like each of the video files are about a gigabyte for an hour.
Okay. So much.
What I do for the training, like the last segment of Amsterdam 5, four of the 5 days were online. The trainer was not there. The trainer was afar. And we recorded that. And all of those recordings, I just put up with the other recordings for the training. With the trainees have access to that through our website.
Okay.
We have a portal for them. But, you know, I think, like, if you'd like, I would love to have a conversation with you about the specifics of the curriculum. That's not what we're here to talk about, but let's make the time and we can talk about it later.
Okay. That would be fine. Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
We can record it and share it with people if you want.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking through some of the questions that people asked here. So about microphone. Well, first of all, about the copyright. If you're reading a lesson, you are violating the copyright. If you are not reading the lesson, you are not violating the copyright. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on television, but I think this is true, right? You can teach any lesson you want. Moshe, you cannot copyright an idea. This was proven in the middle of the last century when these comic books that were made out of classic books, made a comic book out of Moby Dick. And the Herman Melville's family, the author of Moby Dick, sued the company. But since they didn't use the exact words from the book, they had their own dialogue and they had pictures, they followed the story. The story is not copyrighted. Only the particular words in which it is told are copyrighted. So the same thing is true for ATM, and it doesn't matter whether it's recorded or live. When I teach the AYADA group, I paraphrase the lessons, and I do that so I can record them and share them on my website, right? So you're not breaking the law. Somebody asked about microphones. I'm going to tell you a couple of different things. So most people use something like this. This is a Yeti, Y-E-T-I. And it was about $150. I got it on sale. You know, if you want to find out what the best thing is, look on Wirecutter or, you know, just look on best microphones for podcasts, something like that, and see what the latest recommendation is. I am not using this. It's pretty good, but in my laptop, I have a ThinkPad. I have near field microphones. I'm going to send you all this information later. They're included, and they are so good. I mean, one day they were doing construction in the street, and I was doing an online class, and nobody could hear the background. And I use that because it's in my laptop. What a lot of people suggest is getting a mic like this, a freestanding mic, which could be is directional or omnidirectional, putting it in a cardboard box with the opening facing you and lining the cardboard box with egg cartons or with foam, and having the microphone inside that. You get a resonant and clear sound that way. So, you know, some people do that. And here's one more thing that's an option. And this is what we use, This is what we use, I use with my team. It's called CRISP. And CRISP is online sound noise cancellation. It's artificial noise cancellation. They have a free account here. You get 60 minutes a week. And so this is a good thing to know about. If you're stuck somewhere, you know, in public, like one day I had an online class to teach and I was flying home and the flights got messed up and the traffic was bad. I ended up conducting class outside of a Starbucks. And because I had these noise canceling, I have the microphones in my computer, but people who I work with, you know, one of them, she can have her screaming kid in the crib and her mom making dinner behind her and you don't hear anything. So this is, CRISP is a really good thing. It's CRISP.ai if you want to check it out. And they do have a free account and I will send this in the, and it's only $5 a month. So if you don't know if you want to invest in a microphone, then you can try that out. It's kind of a cool tech thing. All right. Some people asked about lights. And I have some lights that you use for videos. The couple of lights I have set up around my desk, depending on what time of day it is, and the shade at my window, I usually do fairly well with the lights. But when I'm teaching, this is my office. When I'm teaching a class and we're doing something online, like recently I taught a class about how to use touch in teaching ATM and how to give one-on-one ATM as an FI. And so what I did for that class is I had one of my students come in and I aimed my camera at my table and I gave a one-on-one ATM with someone with the whole class watching. Right. So, I mean, Patrick was talking about a very good technological way of setting it up. And Patrick is really good at the tech stuff. I am not. You know, I mean, I've gotten better at it out of necessity. But, you know, if you're worried about that, I mean, especially if there's somebody in your household who's good at it, ask them to do it. There are virtual assistants that can take care of that stuff and help you with it. So you don't have to do the things that you're not good at necessarily. All right. Other questions or comments?
Larry, there's one thing I'd like to clarify. It sounds like, of course, you have to invite a specific person to attend and you give them the number, but then once they have that number, they have to log in at the proper time. But you said, do they have to register? Or they have to fill out something each time? I think I fill out my email or something.
So what you do is they get an invitation. You send them the link. And then when you click on that link, you go somewhere and you just put your information in and it sends you back the link for the meeting.
Okay.
Right, for that specific meeting. If you go to AY A Day, you don't have to do that because Quant set up a recurring meeting. So then when you're in Zoom, you could just, you know, when you sign into the Zoom, you could choose that meeting and go directly to it. So you don't have to set up, you don't have to sign in, register, sorry. You don't have to register each individual time for the meeting.
I got it, Larry. I just was a little, I go to several Zoom meetings for different or other organizations, and I just put in their number and I go to it. So, okay, thank you.
Right, you understand, there you go.
Hi, Larry.
Hello.
Hi. I've got a question. It's a very beginner's question.
All right.
So in order for me to see my students, you know, they obviously have to record themselves.
They have to have their video camera on. Yes, they need a camera.
And that can be through the computer or iPhone or whatever it is.
Yeah, that can be through the computer. Their Zoom they have apps, so you can use a tablet or a phone. Okay. You can also teach from your tablet or phone. I think the interface is a little hard to handle. I mean, it's cumbersome. It's not impossible. It's hard to be graceful with it. Okay. But you don't need high tech to be able to do this.
Okay.
You know, depending on your phone, you have to test the sound quality. And look, sound quality and the video quality makes a difference. I recently decided to up my subscription. You know, the what I pay for my internet access, so that I have a better connection and it's more stable.
Okay.
You know, some people are really, really sensitive to sound. So things like pouring tea, you know, that can bother some people. So, you know, you might want to remember when you're doing that to mute yourself. And then you'll learn that you have to remember to unmute yourself. Those things I think can make a difference.
Okay.
But like, people are there, they'll give you feedback. And, you know, some people, most people, and I think especially at this moment, are very gracious, and we want each other to succeed. Mm. So people are helpful.
And do you charge the same amount money-wise?
Ah, you missed the first part of this, didn't you?
I did. I think I came in quite late, yes.
I do. I said I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I also suggested the option of teaching intentionally smaller classes, maybe making them a little longer, calling them semi-private, and okay, charging 1.5 or 1.75 what you usually charge.
Okay.
And I also suggested doing individual ATMs as for the same price as you would do an FI.
Right. Okay.
Because what is it they used to say on Saturday Night Live? And by gosh, I'm worth it. Because you're worth it. We're worth it.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Good to see you.
And you.
Someone else?
Larry.
Yes.
Sherry in Los Angeles. I can't find the button anywhere for the choose breakout sessions. Is that something that you only see if you're the one originating the conference?
That is correct. That is one of the magic powers you pay for. Okay. So yeah, the convener of the meeting controls the recording, controls the breakout rooms. They also, I also control the highlights. So which was what I learned yesterday, because I'd been confused before then. But you know, like sometimes in the AYDA group, if someone's demonstrating, and Quan spotlights them. So the, let's see, I could do that. So I could make me the spotlight. So you could do that on your own by choosing a speaker view, but the host gets a chance to do that. And then I stop spotlighting, and then you could go back between, you could toggle between speaker view and the highlight view. Gallery view, I think.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Larry,
Mitchell.
I'm looking at the chat here, and I'm wondering, after we leave, is the chat going to be available?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Mitchell.
I would like to review all the stuff that's in here.
Okay, so here's what you do. If you look at, just so everybody can catch up, if you scroll your mouse or your pointer over the bottom of your screen, you'll see that there's a bar that shows up. If you click on chat, the chat window will open. So you'll see it either at the side of your videos or floating in front of them. If you go all the way to the bottom, you'll see it probably says everyone to everyone. There's a down arrow so you could chat with individuals. And then there's a little type message here. There's a place where you could type something in. And then all the way to the right of everyone, there's a very faint square with three dots. If you click on those three dots, you can click on save chat, and then it'll show you a green barrel, the green line that says chat saved, and it also says show in folder. And if you click there, it will open your documents folder where Zoom just created a subfolder for the chats. I knew that about my system, but yesterday I didn't know how to describe it. So I did learn something there.
Thank you.
Larry.
You're welcome. Olivia. Is that you? Who is that?
This is Jan.
Oh, hi, Jan.
Hi. I'm actually on my iPad right now because my internet connection on my laptop was crap. So I've been able to get to the chat window okay, but I'm not seeing what you were just describing as a way of saving the chat. So do you know if that's somewhere else on the...
Excuse me. Sorry about that. I don't speak iPad, so I don't know.
Does somebody else know?
I don't know. I actually typed, I also have a different tablet. And so on a different tablet that's not a Mac, I don't have that option either. So there may be a nested buried option somewhere that's not visually obvious. So we'd have to find out if that exists for our tablets.
Yes, and that's what Zoom support is good for. Send them a message and ask them. In the meantime, I will assemble all the things that, all the resources that people listed, and some of the comments, and I'll make that available, okay? Or as Stephanie vient de suggérer, as Stephanie just suggested, if you know somebody here who, you can ask them to save the chat and send it to you.
That'll be good, yeah.
All right, we have... one of my favorite radio shows used to end, and here we are. We've wasted another perfectly good hour together, and it's been an hour and a half. I reserved an hour and a quarter for this. If you need to go, please go. I'll spend a few more minutes. If you have questions or comments you want to share, I'll hang out for a few more minutes. Thank you, Laura. And everybody else.
So, Larry, you would have a little bit of time for my questions afterwards somewhere?
Sure, if you want. What we could do is we could just, why don't we give people a few more minutes and then we could start a new recording.
No worries.
And then Patrick and I will talk about, you want to do this as a public conversation?
I'm actually excited about it. I spent the whole day to set up an online teaching room. And it's quite interesting. So, but I have a few very practical questions. I mean,
cool.
I never did something like break room.
Let's say in like 10 minutes we'll do that.
Okay, great.
Unless, you know, no one has anything interesting to say, which I doubt.
I have a follow-up on the chat. It says save it. Is it, once you do that, is it going to keep this chat saving till the very end, or do you have to do it at the end?
You know what? I wondered that myself. I don't know. I think it, because it saves it at that moment, it's saving a file to your hard drive.
Yes.
It's creating a subfile under your documents directory, and it's saving the file at that moment. So I think if somebody's added something interesting, you want to make sure to save it at the end. Here's the thing, if the host account is set up so that the host automatically gets it saved, so you can always bother the host, but please don't bother me. I have enough to do. No, like I said, I will summarize it and send it to you. Beth from Los Angeles, you had a question, darling.
I have a question, and you may have answered it already, but it went by me. I don't understand why. I have a webcam, and I used it for a little while, but it didn't seem to be any better than what you're seeing right now. I don't understand why I would use it. Do you use a webcam? Are you using one?
Yeah, I'm using an external camera, because when I bought this laptop, it had this amazing camera and these amazing microphones. The camera technology immediately surpassed it, like the day after I bought it. Like all the new laptops had a better camera. So the camera that I have, that's the external camera, is just, it's a higher resolution. That's why I use it. It makes me look more beautiful, darling. What can I say?
That's just not possible, I don't think. But
yeah, well, that's what most people tell me, but not with that tone of voice usually. Thank you.
But so if I'm happy with how I look, I mean, it looked the same. I can't see it. So
here's the thing. Do it with someone else and ask them.
Okay.
Or record it. Record it with one and the other and look at it yourself. Like, testing this stuff, you never test enough. Because, you know, you don't test the one thing you should have tested. Or you don't test what if this would have gone wrong. Look, so redundancy is important. Let me say that again. Redundancy is important. So I didn't do that today. I didn't do it yesterday, so I should have today. But you could record this on another device just in case you forget to hit record. Or if the video doesn't work, you at least have an audio backup, right? My laptop, I mean, I got a laptop on purpose that has a SIM card in it. So it connects to the cellular network. I can also use my cell phone as a connection to this, connecting my laptop to the cell network just in case the power goes out or the cable goes out. I use a cable for my Wi-Fi connection. So I have redundancy there. I live in a neighborhood in town where power goes out more than anywhere else in the county except out on the mountains. And it's just the way the neighborhood is wired. So I have my laptop charged and I have a fully charged extra battery. So I'm ready for that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Larry, hi, it's Breather here in Ireland, and I have to run, but it's wonderful to see you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. And my question is, I wanted to confirm, you said that you would record the conversation with Patrick, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Okay. And by the next time I see you, I will have my new, what is it? It's a new broadband connection so that I can have video as well. Because when I put the video on, it gets distorted. So, but I look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you again so much for today.
Likewise. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hello. Hello. May I ask a question?
S'il te plaît.
I'm stuck. I'm astonished because a lot of microphones are open today on your meeting, and we can still hear each other. Sometimes you see in an hour day when we have two or three. So did you find something special to allow this possibility? No, it's just okay.
Here, hold on a second.
Yes.
The thing is, the one thing that does not work reliably on Zoom is that as the host, I get the choice of muting everybody. And when you do that, it says mute everyone upon entrance. But it doesn't always mute people when they join. And some people join and they forget, and then you have to manually mute them. And I try to keep on top of that. So when other people's microphones are open and it's not making any sound, it's because it's not making any sound and I haven't been alerted to it. But the minute I hear feedback or, you know, somebody talking in the background or whatever, I mute everybody. And I try to stay on top of that because it's distracting, and it's also really bad for the quality of the recording. So that does require some vigilance on the part of the teacher, Stephanie. But it just depends. It depends on the person's microphones and the sound environment that they're in. Okay. More questions? The last word?
Quick techie question, Larry.
Yeah.
You talked about using your TV screen to get enough for the bigger image.
No, that was actually, that's just a second computer screen.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was a TV.
But we did talk about that yesterday. You could certainly use your TV screen, and there's a couple of ways you could do that, right? If you're on your laptop, you can have an HDMI cable to your TV.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether you can do that from the Macs, because they have a different connection.
I know that June LaPointe said something about this yesterday, but you know what I do, another way to do that, here, let me just make a note of that.
And also I have an Apple TV, you know, the box.
I don't speak Apple, sorry. I'm an Android guy, so Android PC guy. Yeah, I like to have control over my system. But what I do is, I don't have cable TV anymore, but I do have different services on my phone, and I have them on my TV, but not all of them. So I use Chromecast. I have a little dongle, a thing that's stuck into one of the HDMI, one of the two HDMI inputs on my TV. And then from my laptop, or from my phone, I can cast that onto the TV. I think you can, I haven't tried Zoom, but you might be able to cast Zoom onto your TV. So there are ways to connect to bigger screens. And if you don't know how to do it, like one of the most important days of my life was the day that my geek, the guy who fixes my computer, a friend of mine was here and he was stuck. And what did he do? He went to Google and he said, how do you do X?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So all of us can do that. And there's videos, there are tutorials. You know, you can learn how to do it. You can ask somebody.
I think I just saw a thing from Nafi saying that she's got Macs and she knows how to do it. So I'll get in touch with her as well.
Nafi, if you'll send it to me, I will add that to the list that I send everybody. Deal? Well, I know your phone number, so I can bother you after class. All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Last question.
I have a question.
Okay.
I was wondering, how long did it take you to feel comfortable using the medium as teaching?
It didn't take me any time. But here's the thing, you know, before I was a Feldenkrais teacher, so this is about my dark secret past, I was a professional magician. I started studying magic when I was 11 years old, and I you know, when I stopped, my last show was at the Fox Theater in San Francisco, and I'd done some TV, and I'd been in, you know, in front of groups of, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people. So I was nervous about the technology, but I, you know, it's kind of like what I felt like what Maxine said a while ago. It was, I was just so happy to have this way of connecting with people. And especially in between the times when we're working together. So like Olivia, and I don't know who else is here from that group, but Olivia is part of a group that I've been going to Boston and teaching there every 6 months for more than a dozen years, or more than 10 years at least. And they meet in between two or three times. They have meetings where they use the videos. They record the videos and then we share them online. And they work with the videos, and they make up a curriculum and they work with each other. And there are times when I have zoomed in to study group with them, so they can ask me questions and we can interact, right? I mean, it gives us a way to connect without having to be there. And, you know, I mean, look, I worked really hard at one point to make it so that people would come here to Santa Cruz and work with me. And then 9/11 happened, and that totally destroyed that model. You know, I had to travel if I wanted to keep teaching. You know, one of the things about traveling is it has a cost in the environment, right? And so I think one thing about having this as an option, I like to have both, is that way I get to be connected with people, you know? And I mean, I go teach in the places in the world where I wake up happy. And part of that is because of the people that I know there that I've gotten to work with, you know, some of you for decades. And this gives us a way to keep that connection going. So I think that outweighs the nervousness. Okay. You know, like I said, practice with people who love you. So you'll see people smiling at you at first. And people will say, hey, by the way, you've got something stuck between your teeth. Right? Because those are your friends. They tell you and not everybody else. Yeah. You know, and that way you'll get to make some mistakes and practice. But you also see, we're in this together. And look, at this time, though we're keeping ourselves apart physically, I don't think we should stay disconnected. No. I think we need the connection all the more. And this is a way to connect. I mean, think about Skype. I mean, Skype is built for grandparents. Anybody can use Skype or the Facebook portal, which has that spooky feature where the camera follows you around. But anybody can use it. You could use that as a medium, you know, and just work with the number of people that you feel comfortable with. Start with what's easy. I think that's, I heard that somewhere. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks. All right. So look, we're going to take, I'm going to stop this. I'm going to say thank you for all of you showing up, asking your questions, interacting with each other online, playing along, thinking about what you have to offer. And like, even if you don't do that, there is the AY A Day group. We meet twice a day at 8 a.m. Pacific time and 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's really fun. It's anayaday.org. I will send that if you don't know it already. Yeah, more people are showing up these days, not surprised. But, you know, just doing ATM with our friends or having somebody to talk to about the classes you teach, this is a time for connecting. I'm going to be offering some stuff around that. I'm available. Allison's going to be offering some stuff. She's available. But so are your colleagues, your study buddies or your study group. And you haven't talked to them for a while. This might be a good time. All right. So, bye.